It's 12:10 on the Business Lunch, the Wintrust Business Lunch, produced by Pete Zimmerman. Hi, it's John Williams here until 1. Then Anna DeVlantis is back after the White Sox break we got.
It's been a long, old troublesome road.
Kind of interesting to see the Dow off around 10 points right now, and now up 1 point. But the NASDAQ is off considerably more. I don't have the percentages in front of me, but the NASDAQ is down 202 points. Let's talk a little bit about what's happening on the markets today. We'll start with Jason Turner. Jason joins us again as the head of multi-asset strategies for Wintrust Wealth Management. Hi, Jason. How are you today?
Doing well. Good to be with you, John.
How do you interpret that? I mean, normally, I don't know, is that unusual to see the Dow up or off a tiny bit and the NASDAQ way off?
I think it's a pattern we have seen emerge over the last month or so in the markets, is we've seen a bit of a turn in terms of sector leadership. Particularly the middle part of the month of September, we saw traditional old economy sectors like industrials, energy, materials, and financials perform pretty well during that middle part of September as technology stocks started to cool off, and we're seeing that same trend today.
Yeah, I guess that's what it is. It's not like, what do they call it, the FANGs, Facebook and Apple and the rest of them, Amazon, haven't made a lot of money, but maybe they're cooling off a little right now, huh?
Well, valuation certainly got extended here as they've been by far the market leaders as the market has recovered from the troubles in the spring. And with valuations where they are, it's only natural we see some profit taking, some return to normal levels of valuation, and some of those other stocks that got left behind start catching up.
Does the president's COVID diagnosis affect the markets today, and will it next week?
But we certainly saw it affect the markets overnight. Dow futures were down over 400 points in the middle of the night. You saw pretty extreme reactions in international markets, particularly in Japan. And you also saw some movements in the currency markets with a bit of a flight to quality with the Japanese yen appreciating versus the dollar overnight. So the market definitely reacted to it. It's the most serious health concern for a president, I think, since President Reagan was shot back in 81.
Sure.
So yeah, the market is going to care about it and will continue to care about it for the next week or so. I think we've already seen this pattern emerge a little bit too. You saw the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, Boris Johnson, get diagnosed earlier in the year and had his own battle with COVID-19. And certainly the UK markets reacted to that on a news flow basis.
I wonder if, though, the latest news is, and I mean, this could change tomorrow, but the news this morning is that while the president is symptomatic, they don't seem to be overwhelming, not Boris Johnson-ish, and lo and behold, the Dow is even now.
Yep, there's certainly been a little bit more of an emerging picture as we've gone through the morning here with the president experiencing some slight symptoms. I think that's a relief to the markets, along with some of the conversations we've seen this morning between the House Speaker and the Treasury Secretary on possible new rounds of fiscal support.
Yeah, let's get to that. Maybe that's more germane, although maybe not. I mean, really, how is it that the markets care so much about the president's health?
Well, the markets are a predictive element. We've mentioned that before, and while the economy and all those economic numbers we look at are mostly backward-looking, the market's looking forward. And as the market looks forward, it looks to a high degree of uncertainty we already had in the month before the presidential election. And the president's current health complications cast even more uncertainty into that. And that's what plays into the market. The market generally doesn't like uncertainty.
I wonder if, you know, you could read the tea leaves this way. If this compromises the president's ability to campaign and therefore compromises his chances at winning the election, then one wonders if the markets would react that way. And if the markets are steady right now, the NASDAQ notwithstanding, but we're just talking about the Dow right now, does that tell you something about how the markets feel about whoever wins in November?
It tells us a little bit. I think we've already started to see over the course of the last month or so markets start to react to a Biden presidency and some of those sectors that have moved or have certainly moved in concert with some of those elements of the Biden plan with the market's expectation he would become president in November since he leads in the polls. We could see a continuation of that occur over the next couple of weeks if there's a pervasive thought that President Trump's medical condition causes him to have more difficulty in terms of a reelection campaign.
Of course, we all know what happens with polls in October and November on election years. And let's also talk more about what Steve Mnuchin and Nancy Pelosi have been trying to cobble together. Now, there's some nuts and bolts for you. We're talking with Jason Turner a little bit about the conversation. And by the way, Jason Turner joins us as the head of multi-asset strategies for Wintrust Wealth Management. So it just seems like for a very long time we've been talking about Steve Mnuchin and Nancy Pelosi having a conversation. But we've been talking about the meetings between Nancy Pelosi and Steve Mnuchin, and I understand that there's good news coming out of that. Catch me up on that and how optimistic we can be on that.
I think we can allow some glimmer of hope that there's a light for potential additional fiscal stimulus to come in. I think as recently as Monday, my thought was there was almost no chance of additional stimulus before the election. And with the comments here on Thursday and this morning, particularly with a ongoing dialogue between the Treasury Secretary and the House Speaker, and them not actually being that far apart in many regards on another round of stimulus, I think we have a glimmer of hope that we could see one before the election.
Do you think the laying off of a lot of airline employees was further motivation for them to all get together?
I think that's definitely part of the motivation. We saw unemployment numbers this morning with an unemployment rate at 7.9% that fell a little more than analysts expected in terms of the percentage. However, it's still going to be the highest level of unemployment since the Department of Labor started keeping that statistic post-World War II on Election Day, because this will be the last update on unemployment we have before Election Day. With that number in and the additional layoffs announced by United American and even Walt Disney, I think that's further motivation that brought the parties a little bit closer together.
How many tens of thousands was it? Was it 26,000, something like that? Disney employees at the theme parks laid off. State Farm had another round of layoffs. Yet we hear differing views here, Jason, about how much we should help these companies or even these individuals. Where are you on that? Should we be as generous as we were last time, more or less?
I think we have to be careful that you don't create disincentive to work, certainly. And that was some of the issue with the FERC of unemployment support. But what's been most encouraging to me, actually, in the most recent round of stimulus is that there's agreement between the Treasury Secretary and the House on another round of checks to individuals. The loss of income we saw in the month of August with the drying up of the unemployment benefit really represented, if we can put it in nationwide terms, a 7% pay cut for the nation as a whole. Those stimulus checks, the second round of stimulus checks, would actually go a long way to filling that gap and provide, I think, a needed level of support under retail sales that we've seen start to really slow down here in the last month or so.
And there has been a direct correlation, right? Stimulus checks and unemployment supplements come in, people spend, right? And then when that dried up, that's when the economy started to drag again, correct?
Yes, exactly right. When we saw a nice jump in retail sales and spending, we saw consumers getting involved in the economy. And then as those unemployment checks dried up at the beginning of August, we started to see a decided trend of retail sales trailing off. Now, it's still been positive, which is a good thing. We're still seeing a recovery. We're still seeing a recovery, but at a much slower pace than we saw at the beginning of the summer. And another round of checks would be supportive.
Pardon me. On the other end of maybe this spectrum, do you have advice for investors if people do see this market in flux? Is there something they should think about with their portfolios?
What we've been encouraging our clients to do as it relates to your investment portfolios is to keep an eye firmly fixed on the long term. I think we've seen improvement in consumer confidence numbers. The Conference Board's last update saw its largest one-month gain in history. That's supportive for the future. And if you have a long-term financial plan, if you have a position that you're comfortable with for the future, these type of market disruptions present you a nice opportunity to rebalance your portfolio to those plans, to make sure that you're not getting out of whack compared to where your long-term plan would be.
But when the economy crashed 07, 08, 09, the market did too, and there were obvious buying opportunities there. It took a little bit of a leap of faith, but if the if the markets fall 50%, you didn't have to be too clever to imagine that they would recover. We really don't have that here. I mean, I don't know where those giant holes are in the market that are buying opportunities, or are there some out there?
I think there are isolated pockets out there, and maybe they're not so isolated. You've seen market leadership very narrow in this recovery. You mentioned the FANG stocks earlier, and if we broaden that definition up to include maybe another dozen names, that's been really the entirety of the market leadership in technology and in health tech, driving the recovery of the markets higher. The rest of the market has mostly been left behind in that equation. As we're seeing today, as we saw in mid-September with some of the sector moves, within the S&P 500, with those old economy names starting to see good gains, I think those represent some areas of possible opportunity for a long-term investor who's willing to take a position there.
Sure. So those are more attractive to you right now than tech stocks?
On a valuation basis, certainly. Those names have not seen the valuation appreciation that we've seen in tech stocks, where we saw a lot of tech names get to very overvalued levels early in September when the market hit its high on September 2nd. We've seen some of those other companies start to see positive gains throughout September and then here this morning as well.
Can you be a little more specific about some of those underperforming companies or sectors? I mean, where really should they look?
The sectors that we're seeing perform well this morning, industrials, materials, financials, those are all up over 1% this morning. Those all experienced some strong gains in September, but still trail the broader market significantly for the year to date. Those are areas that would present opportunities for long-term investors. Would they be willing to ride out some of the shorter-term volatility?
Any last-minute observation here before I let you go, Jason?
Sure. From a last-minute observation, we're going to see higher volatility this month as we run into the election, with or without the health concerns for the president. As we see that higher level of volatility, again, the best advice I can offer for investors, keep your eye on the long term. Look out a little bit further than what's happening in the markets today, and you'll see some level of stability and support emerge as we move forward in a recovery.
Good advice. Interesting to talk to you, Jason. Thanks for your help today.
Thank you, John.
Jason Turner from WinTrustWealth.com. Jason Turner is the head of multi-asset strategies for WinTrust Wealth Management. This is WGN Radio, and you are listening to the WinTrust Business Lunch. Let's talk a little bit about an event that I was mentioning just a little while ago. This may be new to you, but there's something called Let's Talk, which is a collaboration of women restaurateurs. It was founded a few months ago by our guest to enable women to get to know each other, to support each other, to share resources, undertake collaborative actions. So 25 women belong to the Chicago chapter, and they have an event at Let's Talk Chicago coming up that I think we all might enjoy. Rohini Day joins us. She is the owner of the Vermilion Restaurant in Chicago, and they've also got one, I think, in Manhattan. Rohini, you're on WGN. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
So is that a fair introduction of what Let's Talk is and a little bit about you? You've got two restaurants, right?
I had one in New York for 10 years, John, but I'm so relieved I don't have it today. it was 14,000 square feet on Park Avenue, and rents are nothing anyone wants around their necks these days.
Yeah, no kidding. Is that restaurant still up and running in Manhattan, though, but somebody else?
No. I closed it. And interestingly, the building sold to a Chinese conglomerate, and the vision for the entire building changed. So my lease did not renew. But Chicago is 17 years around, very much still around. And the irony is I relaunched this early this year only to shutter it for 6 months immediately after.
You're speaking about Vermilion in Chicago?
Correct.
Yeah. So you are not open then right now, your restaurant here?
No. I did close during the pandemic, but then relaunched in July. And so Indian Latin Fair, for those of you who are adventurous, but I'd love to talk more about Let's Talk, because we're deeply excited about what we're bringing to Chicago.
So what is this food tasting or October tasting that's coming up?
Yeah, so John, so this is 25 of us women who belong to this, but 16 of us are doing four incredible collaborative menus. And no one is a stranger to ordering food in their homes, you know. But who has ever had a tasting pulled together by four different restaurants? So let me just describe one. And if you don't like, if you're not salivating at the end of it, then I've failed dismally.
Okay.
So the one we call is Global Extravaganza. So think of Vermilion's blackened chili tamarind ribs melting off the bone with lemon rice. That's Indian Latin. Then throw in a Vietnamese salad by Hai Su. Then add a farm-to-table lamb sausage done like in-home by Prairie Grass Cafe, and an incredible to die for dessert by Karina Havidian and Jordi. So that's just one of the tastings, and we have four of these. And so we've got an incredible supply chain running every Friday and Saturday in Chicago through Talk. People can get it in their homes or pick it up. And that's just one example of the collaborative things we've been up to.
Talk is the delivery service, so people will be able to get, say, that collection from four different restaurants in one order, essentially, huh?
Exactly, and four different menus, so 16, elements to play with.
Do you get to pick and choose, or are they sort of preset, like here's unit one, here's unit two?
It's four preset ones, but we endorse trying all of them. I've actually ordered three for myself this weekend, other than my own, come back and keep coming back. And if there's one way to reward your teams or do those virtual dinners, during the October, I would say this is it. You get to support women restaurateurs. You get to support an industry that's probably the hardest hit because of our service component in combination with product. Half of our independent restaurateurs are either closed or, you know, unemployment is raging. I mean, I can go on and on.
Sure.
But it'll be just a fabulous bolstering of our group and enable us to do so much more to survive the winter that's coming ahead.
Well, today is the first Friday in October, and I understand it's Fridays and Saturdays throughout the month of October. So I guess tonight would be the first night we could use Talk to order these combinations from these restaurants, correct?
So today is the first weekend that it's being offered, but the ordering is done by pre-ordered by 4 p.m. The Thursday, so 4 p.m. yesterday. So get on Talk and order for next weekend now, because some of these are actually selling out, so I'd encourage everyone to get on there now.
Are they available for in-restaurant dining, or is it just delivery?
Just pickup and delivery.
I see. Are these restaurants, though, open for in-restaurant dining as well?
Yes, all of them are, but to be able to prepare and serve the food of four different restaurants on-site is a little difficult, which is why this you know, pre-packaged, and it's all fresh. It's going to be delivered now. In fact, I'm headed to Vermilion now to take our food over to the rest of our group. So it's all fresh from the day.
So does the staff from one restaurant go to the other restaurant and prepare it there, or do they send the recipe and the materials for it? I always thought that restaurants were a little protective about their recipes and their dishes.
We have a little supply chain going, John, where we actually take it prepared to each other's places.
I see. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, this is ambitious.
It's never been done before. It's a first, and I think it's going to be a raging success, because who wouldn't want to try four restaurants in one and then get to try another four, you know, instead of being putting all your eggs in one.
Yeah, so, no kidding. Okay, so the website is choosechicago/letstalk, choosechicago/letstalk to find out more. And you're right, I am very interested. I am salivating, so be ready to order for next weekend.
But that being said, John, I apologize for cutting you off. I mean, all of us are very much open. All of us are doing our delivery and takeout in addition to dining in our restaurants. And I know people are justifiably cautious of dining with us because you can't eat without your mask. But I will be the first one to say, you know, we get our team tested weekly. We all wear masks. We all sanitize like crazy. We are distancing our tables incredibly. We are so protective about our teams and our guests. And I will, you know, at the risk of being politically out there, which I always am, we are fundamentally safer than the White House and the entire executive administration. So for those of you who are worried about dining in restaurants, come to some of us, the ones who are doing it properly.
Good luck to you, and we'll try and order up some next week. Rohini, we appreciate you joining us.
Thank you so much, John.
Rohini Day, and again, to find out those menus and your chances to order, choose Chicago/Let's Talk. If she can climb Mount Kilimanjaro, and she did, she can organize this. We'll pause here. Still more to come on WGN. Let's get some business news now. And I think it's Jordan Burnfield, is it, or Steve Grzanich has got more business news.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Nurses at the University of Illinois Hospital have overwhelmingly approved a new contract. The four-year agreement covers about 1,400 members. It comes following a week-long strike. The contract guarantees the hiring of 160 more nurses to reduce patient load and more protective gear to safeguard against COVID-19. Get those spicy McNuggets before they're gone. McDonald's fans love them so much, apparently, that most restaurants have been selling out. That's not all. The new spicy dipping sauce and Chips Ahoy McFlurry also said to be in low supply. McDonald's says there's always a chance those limited items could be back on the menu again. The COVID-19 pandemic has forced the Joffrey Ballet of Chicago to cancel its 2021 season. That will delay the world premiere of Kathy Marston's Of Mice and Men. The decision will cost the Joffrey more than $9 million in ticket revenue.
Steve Sinclair joins us now on the Wintrust Business Lunch. He's a Chicago entrepreneur and the founder and CEO of a company called Bounty. Just think about this. Two facts as we get started. The TSA says 100,000 items are left behind each month in U.S. airports. Each month. And on average, hotels will collect 10 items per room per year. So there's a lot of stuff out there in the world, and he's got an app to help you find it. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. And it's an exciting time to talk technology on a Friday.
So we have 4 minutes to do it, and it sounds complicated.
We can do it.
How does this work?
Well, it's an AI-based mobile and web platform for hotels, aviation venues, and education. And basically, it's a software application that staff can use. And when they go, and let's say they go into a hotel room, someone leaves something behind, they take a picture of it, and AI takes over it, and like magic, it fills in forms and is able to put all the data into a global database at the property, and everyone in the staff has access to the lost and found. And it's a really, really sophisticated system, and it was predicated on the fact that I had a really bad experience at a hotel. And then I have an entrepreneurial DNA, and I just put these pieces together and redesigned how I would imagine like the perfect lost and found system to work. And though it sounds like it's really sophisticated because it's AI and cloud and mobile and all that stuff, the really cool part about it is its simplicity. If you can take a photo or a selfie, you can digitize your lost and found at a hotel.
Do I need to take a picture of my items before I lose them?
No, you don't, actually. And the neat part about it is most people, when they leave stuff behind in the room, it's just random. You know, it could be, you know, scarves, watches. Keys. You take a picture of it and automatically adds it to the hotel's database. So as a guest, you're departing the hotel, you might go up to somebody and just say, hey, I think I left my watch in my room. And instead of having to call 15 people to figure out whether that's true or not, they actually just whip out their phone and be able to look right through the lost and found and have immediate access to it. And so the customer experience is so much better and more responsive for hotels when we have a mobile-based technology working alongside some of the other technologies that make this thing work.
Does it help you determine how it will be re-delivered to you?
Yes. One of the things that happens is guests typically leave the hotel, get on a plane, land in New York. Then they call up the hotel and they say, hey, I need to get this stuff sent to me. That's a huge operational challenge for most organizations that need to ship it back, specifically with hotels. They have to collect credit card information, shipping information. They have to go to FedEx.com and try to put in shipping stuff. Bounty gets rid of all of that. And basically what we did is we invented a new way for the hotel to be able to just send an email to the guest. They open up a web browser, fill out their shipping, what kind of shipping speed they want from the carrier, like first, next day air, 3 day air, whatnot. Throw in a credit card, hit submit, and the label is purchased. We lose that, all that operational overhead from the hotel. And, you know, operating hotels right now is very difficult, and they're going to have to do a lot more with less.
The website is Bounty, B-O-U-N-T-E, like a pirate's bounty, right? Or some sort of lost treasure, Bounty.
.net.
B-O-U-N-T-E .net. And so it's been working for a while, huh? That is, people have had success stories.
Yes. Our product market fit has been great. We've been working on boutique hotels. We've got budget hotels. We've got everybody that's basically anyone who has a guest or a visitor has a lost and found problem. They've been interested in it. We were selected as a solution for a major airport, and we're working with them going through, you know, obviously COVID's putting the brakes on some of the implementation on that, but we're super excited to be able to, like, reinvent how this software is going to solve the lost and found for the aviation community as
well. When I travel, I should have the app Bounty on my phone then, right?
You won't need any software on your phone. The Bounty app is for, like, the staff and the employees that are the ones who actually end up collecting that information or collecting those items. And all you need to do as a passenger or a guest is, you know, text to a specific number, like, hey, I lost the phone, or I lost this, and this AI assistant will gather the rest of the information, notify the staff that you just, like, said, I just lost something, and then they get on it right away.
Okay, so the Bounty is for maybe the airports and the hotels, but as an individual mm-hmm. who lost something, who do I call or where do I go to initiate this?
Well, you can either call the hotel and just say, hey, I lost something, right, and they immediately will be able to respond to you, or text, depending on what kind of technologies these hotels are implementing for that kind of frontline communication.
Got it. So really what you want are the hotels and the airports to utilize this technology.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Chicago based. What a great idea. Bounte, bounty.net. Bounty.net. Nice to know that system is out there. And while we don't have time for some of the great success stories, the drone recovery, et cetera, know that it has been working. We'll tell those stories another day, Steve. Congratulations. Thanks for your time.
Great. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.